This is going to be super casual. We're going to record the regular podcast from Raptors HQ and Raptors Republic. Do questions. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. We're all riding so high after last night. We'll talk about that shortly. I'm Blake Murphy from Raptors Republic. This is William Liu, formerly of Raptors Republic and kind of still of Raptors Republic. Okay. And the score and the defeated. What are we introducing you as, man?
Introduce me as Twitter superstar, Will Liu. Will underscore Liu, guys, follow me, please.
Is it William underscore Liu?
It is.
You gotta say your handle right. They're not gonna follow you otherwise.
That's for the real fans who already know.
The real fans already follow you, though. You're trying to bump that follower count.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's just move on. This is a good intro.
This is off to a bad start. On the far side, Sean Woodley from Raptors HQ, the Paul Millsap of the game recap.
It's true. I don't even know what that means.
What?
I don't know either, man. Your game recaps are on point, is what I'm saying.
Oh, thanks. I learned from you, I guess.
We don't need to do that here.
Yeah, they do like 1,000 words longer. Paul Millsap, the reason that DeMar DeRozan kept the faith. He said this the other day. You know, Paul Millsap struggling, then Millsap goes off for 45, then DeRozan goes off for 35.
He almost, there was a time there where it looked like he might do the 45. Fully. The first half was beautiful.
There were some bold beat writer claims about if DeRozan scored 45 too, so a few people are lucky that didn't happen. This is Dan. Let's move on.
Wow. It starts already, wow.
Talk to the mic, Dan. This is Dan Reynolds, also of Raptors HQ.
I don't
want
to talk too loudly. I want to dominate the whole volume.
That'd be the only thing you dominate between the two of us ahead of the Raptors Republic 3-on-3 tournament. June 12th, which if anyone's interested, by the way, we're going to post on Raptors Republic Monday or Tuesday. Our annual 3-on-3 tournament is June 12th this year. We'll put it up for registration sometime next week. But again, thanks so much for coming out. Just yell out stuff if you want to hear us talk about stuff. We're going to start, obviously, with Game 5 from last night at the Air Canada Centre, which, full disclosure, I wasn't at the Brooklyn Raptors Game 7 from a couple years ago. But last night was the loudest I've ever heard while I was at the ACC. That fourth quarter comeback was obviously incredible. Will, you wrote something terrific for your Medium blog about it that was just, you know, pure raw emotion. Are you still feeling some of that pure raw emotion now?
Yeah, most definitely. I couldn't sleep last night. It was straight up until like 2 a.m. in the morning. I had work.
As opposed to 2 a.m. in the evening?
Yeah, of course. You know, I was very excited, as I am very excited now, after having a couple of beers and not a lot of sleep. That was the best game I've ever gone to, personally, in any sort of sporting event.
In the rich people seats, too.
In rich people seats.
Yeah, I have those seats.
Clearly, blogging is a very lucrative enterprise.
Medium is taking off, guys.
Guys.
This is why the Ringer's on Medium.
It's got a built-in audience, all right, of 50 viewers. Yeah. But, you know, regardless, I have rich friends. That's what it is. But, yeah, there were great seats. It's the best seats I've ever had. It was the best game I've ever won to. It was everything from, you look at how good Paul George was, dominating everybody for three quarters, and then Frank Vogel going into an all-bench lineup for no reason. Thanks to Frank Vogel, by the way. Game 5 would not have been possible without Frank Vogel. And, yeah, man, the Raptors made the biggest, comeback in playoff history, right? Is that accurate?
Raptors playoff history. Because they don't make comebacks.
We really don't.
There are very few W's.
You need to win the game to make a comeback.
That's exactly it. Let me ask it, and I'll ask you. They were down, we were sitting next to each other. They were down 15 at the end of the third quarter. All the tweets were coming out. This team was buried. The mega memes were getting ready with Drake jumping off of the Raptors and things like that. Did
Alex
you
had all of his crying MJ faces ready to go?
A lot of pre-made crying MJs.
Yeah. Alex's recycle bin right now. This is Alex Wong, everyone, at Stephen _ LeBron on Twitter. This guy should be up here. Yeah. How's gin, man? Okay, so they're down 15 at the end of the third quarter. They start chipping away at it, but confidence, and it felt this way in the ACC too, was pretty low. At what point did you start thinking that mini run against that garbage lineup could actually sustain?
I think that Biombo dunk was one of the sort of big turning points. But again, it doesn't, when these things happen, they don't feel like they're going to lead. I feel like we watch enough games to be like, yeah, they're going to make their run.
they're going to get within, you know, some point. But you don't imagine they'll actually turn the tide all the way. So so you're sitting there going like, well, like let's see. And then when the Powell dunk happens, it's like, is this really going on? That's why I almost think he was going to miss it, because it's like, well, he's not going to hit it, right? I mean, this doesn't happen for Raptors fans, right?
No, and we had such a good view of it, like the ball bobbling in his palm.
Yeah.
As he went up, and we were on that end of the gondola.
Well, the whole gang of us looked at each other like, he almost missed that. That almost looked out of his hand when he just went up there.
Yeah, I think the only time the voices got higher in that section of the arena that night was the Biyombo long two.
Oh, yeah.
That was that was the ultimate no, yes shot.
Yeah, it was scary. So he went through Biyombo's trouble, but yeah.
You mentioned, though, that you know these comebacks start to happen, and it feels like it's not going to happen because so often it doesn't, not only because it's the Raptors and they're cursed and moribund and everything, but because 15-point comebacks in a playoff game against a team that won 45 games is not a very realistic outcome to expect. And it felt a little bit like Game 4, too, where they had kind of pressed a couple times and cut that lead a little bit and then had it go away. The moment, to me, that it really felt like that might be the case again was when Terrence Ross clanged three threes over a span of two possessions.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
That was Pete Ross right there, yeah.
Will, were you back out on Terrence Ross at that point?
I was out on Terrence Ross after he interfered with a three-point shot. I was so angry at him. I contemplated running the court, but I didn't.
How many threes before you back in on Terrence Ross?
One. He made the one three of his game, and that brought them back within 2 points.
That's all you need to do, man. Just be unconscious.
Just do something positive, Ross. I'm not asking for a lot, all right? Just do something positive.
But hey, he's been a big part of big lineups for them. He has one of the worst plus minuses in the series, but he was a part of that fourth quarter stretch.
He's still young.
He was.
A stretch for Terrence Ross to all of you.
What's that?
Stretch for Terrence Ross to all of you.
Sure. Yeah.
Man. Super stretch for.
Yeah.
So Ross clangs those couple of triples. It feels like maybe it's not going to happen, and that's, you know, they push the Pacers to bend, but Paul George is back in the game, George Hill's back in the game, Monte Ellis is back in the game, Frank Vogel ostensibly has his wits back about him. By the way, they were, minus 18 in the 655 that George had in that game? Like, he's got to play 48 minutes in game six. We'll get into that, I guess.
When he got off the bench, basically, it was like, in that fourth quarter, he was like, okay, here we go. Like, you could hear the bell ringing, like, okay, he's coming back in now to put this game away. And the fact that it didn't happen was pretty amazing.
So, Sean, they push the Pacers. It looks like maybe it's not going to happen. The Pacers push back a little bit. You know, obviously, I don't think anyone was confident until the final buzzer went, and we'll talk about that final play. But at what point did it feel for you like this was actually happening? It wasn't just like a fake comeback that was going to fall short.
I think it was really that Corey Joseph three.
The one that,
like,
put them up six?
Yeah, yeah. It was like a very DeMar DeRozan play, at least pre-playoff DeMar DeRozan, and where he actually drove past Paul George. There was like a killer screen set by Biyombo. And then he threw a dart into the corner for Corey Joseph. It kind of reminded me of that three against Washington a little bit. Sort of a different mechanism to the play, but very similar. And then Joseph hit the three, and I was like, okay, I think we can breathe a little bit here. And then, of course, like, the last minute happened, and everything kind of came screaming back, and it was nervousness and terrible. It was such a weird dynamic sitting in the blogger section of the press row, because, like, everyone else is, like, ESPN, and like CTV and like all the news people, and they're all serious and they don't really care. And then we're sitting there, there's like five or six of us, and we're just like sweating and fighting.
We're under control.
There's no cheering on press row is the thing, and I made that mistake once before in the Nets series on a big Amir Johnson dunk and kind of like audibly fist bumped, and I can't do it again. But I think we were all pretty well behaved. The fact that no one yelped when Norman Powell threw down that dunk is, I mean, good on us.
We looked at each other.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's amazing. But we didn't say anything.
But part of that was probably that the confidence wasn't there yet. So you mentioned the Joseph three. That puts them up by six. The Pacers kind of come back. Miles Turner gets an offensive rebound, which is the issue with playing that super small lineup late when Biyombo's the only forward on the floor. So Turner gets an offensive rebound, then Solomon Hill tips an offensive rebound and gets a three off of it. Then the Pacers have the ball down three with like 11 seconds left. Monte Ellis goes for the quack two, the botched quick two.
Monte Ellis continues to defy any analytical logic. Thanks to Monte Ellis for that comeback.
So he continues to be Monte Ellis.
He's got it all.
Yeah, and he has the ball in his hands late with Paul George on the floor and Kyle Lowry all over Monte Ellis. But it comes down, and there's 2.7 seconds left, and off another offensive rebound, which, you know, it's still kind of unclear whether it was off of Ellis or Biyombo.
Yeah, a little dicey.
Okay. What, I mean, where are we at with Solomon Hill here?
The new Raptor killer.
But, like, more emotionally than that, like, has Solomon Hill quickly become, like, the most hated Pacer in this series? Like,
well, we're not playing basketball, right? So.
Yo, he did talk shit about our team.
He did a lot of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. For Solomon Hill. You can't talk shit if you're number 44.
If you are rich man's James Johnson, you are not afforded the opportunity.
That's not a good thing.
James Johnson with one hot stretch of three-point shooting.
Actually, show of hands, are there any James Johnson truthers in the room right now?
There can't be any left, right?
Good.
Dan Reynolds is your man for that, by the way.
Well, I wrote a lot of words about him, but it was more of a spiritual journey. It was more of like an emotional journey. It's not really so much about the numbers itself. So.
Did it lead you on a similar path to James Johnson's season, where for a while it looked, and now spiritually...
The column I wrote every week slowly got worse as the season went on. So yes, it was much like James Johnson's season. Yes.
I agree, it got much worse
Thank
as
you.
The season went on.
Your column, not James.
nothing. James plateaued, man.
He plateaued?
He was the same all year, really. Was he not?
I mean, he had a decent
moment against the Spurs.
The win probability fall off was much greater with Reynolds.
This is what we came for, to talk about James Johnson.
Yeah, okay, we're going to move off James Johnson. Let's talk about Solomon Hill.
Tell you what, if Paul George hits a game winner in game 6, or God forbid, game 7, the James Johnson talk all offseason is going to be more ridiculous than you can anticipate. Look, I wrote before game 5 about how Patrick Patterson should start for what feels like the 20th time, and the very first comment was, no, James Johnson should be starting. And it was legitimate, and it was serious, and they made a case, and there are actually people at this point who still think James Johnson should be starting at the 3 or at the 4 for the Raptors. So don't rule out if Paul George hits a big shot and Damari Carroll looks a step slow, or, you know, DeMar DeRozan's on him for some reason, the James Johnson stuff's going to come back.
I'm not saying it's not possible. I mean, it's the internet, but I mean... I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for now.
All right.
Okay, so...
So much James Johnson talk.
way
too much.
Yeah. Come back in the offseason and we'll have the James Johnson talk about how much we should re-sign him for.
Not
to coach the D-League team.
All right. Solomon Hill, yeah, no.
Okay, so...
What's up with Solomon Hill turning into Ray Allen? This is a big question for me. Because he shot 32% in the regular season from deep, and he's been on fire against us. Every time I see him shoot, I'm happy, but he makes it.
Yeah, well, the big difference between these threes and the ones he took all season is most of them are wide open, because the Raptors still haven't figured out three-point defense, really.
That is true. The Raptors do overhelp a lot. Saw that in the first half.
Definitely, and they definitely overhelped on the final play. Paul George gets the inbound. The call was apparently for Norman Powell to foul Paul George on the floor, which would send the Pacers to the line to shoot two. Then it's a free throw game with like 2 seconds left. I watched it back a couple times. Powell definitely didn't do enough to get the foul call and admitted that he kind of went for the steal, and at that point George was a little too away from him. Corey Joseph admitted it was a mistake to double, because that got Solomon Hill a wide open three.
He said he was saved by the bell. That was
timely reference, yeah. Corey Joseph. But yeah, so Solomon Hill hits this three. What did you think? You had a different vantage point than we had. We all had the same vantage point. Did you think it was good from where you were?
Yeah, so I'm like sitting behind the Raptors basket. So I'm like watching the play happen right before me. Again, I have very rich friends. This is a point I'm trying to illustrate.
Are you friends with Nav?
Yes. Well, there's a lot of Navs in my life, sorry. But, I have to think about which one for a second.
Needless to say, your rich friends didn't show up here, right?
No, not at all.
Alex, I guess.
Alex is pretty rich. And he's a friend. All right. Yeah, look, I thought the shot was good. Like, I thought, like, it came in regulation. It looked like it did. I took a video of the shot, so, like, there's no celebration at all. Well, why would I celebrate? That'd be weird. He made the shot to tie the game, which I thought. But, I mean, it looked good. It looked like literally everything that could happen wrong for the Raptors up 4 with, like, what, 10 seconds left, they somehow managed to turn that into a fingertip away from, like, actually tying the game and going to overtime. I don't know about you guys, I would not have felt very confident. What do you think would have happened in overtime?
Lost.
I don't want to think about
terrible
it.
Terrible
yeah.
things.
I don't want to think
very
about
terrible
it.
Very terrible
things. I had a weird sort of moment with that shot, because I think I was so stressed out and so, like, scared of what was about to happen that once the ball was passed in and, like, George kind of played with it a little bit, I thought the clock had started late.
I was going to ask about this next.
Yeah, because the play seemed like it lasted a lot longer than 2.5 seconds. And then, like,
it's a lot of shit that happened in 2.7 seconds.
Yeah, and then when Hill put it up, I was like,
the buzzer should have gone like a second ago. What's going on? So it went in, and I was just, it was like double disappointment because I thought it should have been over anyway. And then, like, eventually, obviously, things came back around, and it was euphoria. But man, that was it was a weird sort of like time stood still moment, I think.
Yeah, DeRozan and Casey said kind of the same thing today. They're like, that's a lot to happen in 2.7 seconds.
Yeah, what's up? Home court advantage, right? Home court advantage, maybe?
That clock should have started the second the referee handed the ball.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, so obviously he misses. The Raptors technically win on a walk-off review. Did that take the excitement away from you at all, Dan? Like winning in that fashion instead of the shot rimming out or the buzzer clearly going off or anything?
Honestly, I was prepared for anything. When it happened that way, I thought it did look a split second late, but I was like, you can't tell, you don't know. I was just like, what is... I was in a daze. The whole quarter threw me in a daze. The final minute was just like, what is going on here? And then when it went in, I wasn't even shocked. I was just kind of like, okay, all right. And then when it gets disallowed, it's like, it was a moment of just like, hey, that's something went our way. Like a key thing sort of went our way. And it was one of those plays that was very indisputable. It's not like a block charge call where you can sort of be like, well, you know, different vantage points. You look, the review actually mattered, which it seems like the reviews always take a million years. That was the other thing. The review didn't take that long.
Yeah.
But then in other plays, like the clear path foul for Biombo at the midcourt in game four, where game four.
He missed all three throws.
As if Biombo was going to dribble in and like tomahawk dunk it from half court. It's like that review took forever. This review was like immediately they were like, no basket. So it was just kind of like, yes, everything is right. Everything is good and right with the universe. Yeah, we are going to go home happy, and that's fine. I'm good.
You mentioned kind of being, you didn't say at peace, but like, okay, anything could happen. Like, if it went in, well, whatever. Is that almost a blessing of having rooted for a team that in their 21-year history has never had anything go their way, where, like, you're almost numb to moments like that? Because I'm not, but, like...
But this is exactly... No one is... Like, people are upset about... Like, people would be upset if they lost a series. No doubt about that. But it's like, no one... But everyone's kind of like...
Everyone would be very reasonable.
But that's what I'm saying is everyone would just kind of be like, we would just be like, I can't believe it. But then it's like, there's this kind of like a shoulder shrug of like, well, the Raptors, you know, it's just like, and I'm not saying that's good, but we're in this.
You're so well adjusted. I said move the team to Seattle. I don't want to see a basketball fan that ever again.
Because this is just year after year, things happen, and it's just like, well, you know, but again, this is, hopefully, it becomes the game where you start to think about, like, look, things can break our way. Our team can come together and be good when it matters, even after playing poorly for three quarters of the game. And, like, you know, the momentum can start to turn and it'd be like, well, yeah, the Raptors are a good team and they can win this. They should win this series and they should go on and make some more noise in the next round. Who knows? I don't know.
Okay, so maybe it was this spiritual turning point like that. Did you see any sort of, you know, I guess, narrative value in the fact that last year's team collapsed in the playoffs, the team the year before dropped, you know, Game 7 because they were inexperienced. This year they add guys with the idea of being able to win at both ends of the floor. They add guys with the idea of being more mentally and physically tough. Did it, you know, to me, it was kind of cool or interesting, I guess, in the fact that they had this opportunity to win the most important game that this core has ever played, really, with their defense, and then to show the mental toughness of Solomon Hill getting that offensive rebound and hitting that three, Monte Ellis getting stopped by Kyle Lowry, but then they get the offensive rebound, and then the shot even goes in. So you know, all of these things that the offseason was supposed to be built around, the improved defense, the ability to win multiple ways, the lineup versatility of playing four smalls and Biombo down the stretch, and then that kind of mental toughness to where, you know, the Pacers getting that offensive rebound in years past off the Monte Ellis miss, like that would have broken last year's Raptors, I think. And that's like, that's an unprovable, really intangible thought, but I think it is. I don't think that last year's team could have gotten two stops on back-to-back possessions. Plus, they denied the inbound on the initial play with 2.7 seconds left, too. So, you know, Hill hit that shot, but they ran out of time. So it was really three good defensive stands in a row for a franchise that has never been able to get it done on the defensive end.
Last year's team wouldn't even have been in that situation.
Of course.
So, you know, how much closer has it get this way?
Get your strizzy on, man.
I'm on. So where are we going with that, sorry?
Just, like, does it mean something to you, or does it validate, or I guess the whole story this season has been a lot of people don't want to believe in the Raptors to make this run until they've made it, because, you know, once bitten, twice shy, or twice bitten, whatever, but now all the things that they said that they had changed to make them more able to win in the playoffs were kind of on display in this 12-second, you know, clip of the season.
That 12-minute.
12-minute.
12-minute as well, yeah.
Yeah, and the 12-second. Well, this is, I mean, this is what I mean by sort of a turning point. Like, the game was not good. They did not play very well for long stretches of it, but at the same time, it's like, there's no one coming in the game where you're like, oh no, what's going to happen now? Like, you're not, it's not Ty Lawson going off the bench, you're like, okay, now we're going to use this guy on the court. Like, it's like, the dynamic of the team feels much more...
I mean, Scola didn't come in.
But he was Scola. I mean, at least it's not going to do anything crazy. You know?
Crazy bad.
You guys don't get nervous when Terrence Ross comes in the game?
I don't. I'm an unabashed Terrence Ross stan, so I...
Wait, so when he picked that ball off the rim for three, you were not like, oh.
It was an honest mistake, Will.
Suck,
it was an honest mistake.
Like, he's built up so much... just goodwill with me with very little reason that it didn't really affect me. And then when he hit that three before he clanked three more, everything was validated, and he's always going to be part of that comeback now, despite going 1-for-4 from 3 in the final quarter.
That's true.
You need him just to be like the, what's that, irrational confidence guy?
He's got irrational confidence.
In all aspects of life.
Like, you look at
shoot your shot.
Congrats.
Podcast after dark here. Holy.
If you look at last year, though, like, he doesn't even take those shots.
He's
like,
not on the floor.
Yeah, well, first of all,
we got Francis Vasquez on the floor.
But other than that, he's turning it over, or he's just sort of like passing
it
off and being, yeah, he's being deferential. Like, yeah, he wasn't great in those little instances, and maybe he is a detriment sometimes, and he hasn't been in the series for sure, but I think Terrence Ross is fine. I think the money he's making is fine, and those couple instances of being awful didn't really affect me too much.
Just a couple instances.
I'm blind to him. I love Terrence Ross.
It's funny that you mentioned Gravis Vasquez being on the floor in that situation last year, because... holy shit, Norman Powell.
Yeah.
Like, and a first.
I was wondering when you get around to this.
Yes, we're definitely going to get around to Norman Powell multiple times.
We got to talk about Masai Ujiri's trade in the summertime. Getting Norman Powell, getting a future first-round draft pick, which the Raptors are going to get, because whatever, pick protection. Who cares? We're going to get it. We're going to get the pick. And then cap room. And then we turn that cap room into almost, not directly, but... about the same amount of money we signed Corey Joseph, who was also great. He's also been great in the playoffs.
That deal,
but most importantly, Norman Powell. Holy crap.
That deal could have been
great as
Vasquez for the number 46 pick, and if they hit on Norman Powell like they did.
Yeah, Norman Powell, look, Norman Powell's a rookie. He played, like, what, 25 substantial games this season as a bench piece and sometimes as a starter, and he scored more points than Gravis Vasquez did this season. And obviously, Gravis is injured, but he shot, like, 38%. And
hey, he led the league in assists one season.
I could lead the league in assists if I run pick and roll with Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson straight before.
He has the best shimmy in the league. And that's
all you haven't seen my shimmy, though.
The issue is you have to hit a shot to get to shimmy.
Yeah, fair point.
Or win the game in which the shimmy took place.
Ooh.
Yeah. That was an irrational confidence guy right there.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. You know what? Cool. Definitely, yeah.
I wonder if Terrence Ross is in his locker stall.
It's the ghost that haunts that locker.
Actually, is he in the...
He's the one to the next
of it. It's the one to the right. I think Scholl is in his.
Okay. This is very inside baseball.
Yeah, no. Please tell us more. This is
the access people came for, man.
Tell us inside stories.
Inside stories?
Yeah.
About the locker room.
About the locker room. What was the mood in the locker room like yesterday?
I didn't go in the locker room, so I had to...
It was basically just a series of scrums. Basically, they bring out the guys to the podium, and then while the podium stuff is going on, it's just like... Patterson talked, Biombo talked, Joseph talked, Powell talked, and I think that's it.
So for those who don't know how it works in the playoffs, you kind of have to, when you're there as media, you kind of have to choose whether you want the guys who are getting the podium and the coaches or the locker room, because those things happen simultaneously. So, you know, if you want Lowry and DeRozan and Casey, you can't get anyone else unless you're lucky enough to have two credentials, in which case you can split up. I didn't get to go in the locker room and get a feel for what the vibe was like. The feel at practice today was very, very much that the job is not done. And I guess from there we can transition to game six. The Raptors won game five with this ridiculous comeback, but the reason they needed this ridiculous comeback is because they turned in three terrible, terrible quarters after turning in four terrible, terrible quarters the game before. The Raptors really aren't playing that well for a team up 3-2 in a series. And look, when the favorite is up 3-2 in a seven-game series in NBA history, 92.1% of the time they win. The Raptors are in good shape.
Right. Whoa. 92.1. That was right on the tip of your tongue.
Yeah, I included in the story last night.
Okay.
All right. I'm a pro.
I know.
So look, the odds are in the Raptors' favor, but the fact is that like their margin for error is still very, very small. They could drop, if they drop two in a row, they're done. And one of those games is in Indiana, and the Raptors, that quarter aside, aren't really playing very well right now. So I guess my question is, you know, series-wise, the confidence should be high because, you know, the Raptors have every edge right now. But in terms of how they're playing, you know, they're getting outplayed by the Pacers except for a 12-minute chunk.
I'm just going to say this. This is where, again, momentum turns, and you want to believe that the Raptors are looking at themselves going, okay, we played game two and three, for example, where we played very well. We played game three in Indiana, played very well. It's like the team is there. The team is capable of easily dominating the bench unit and, for the most part, taking out the guys who are the key guys, except for George. And even George, they at least bother. They can throw multiple guys at him. They can do different things to bother. Yes, he's a great player, so obviously it's hard to stop. You would assume that this would sort of make you feel comfortable. Unfortunately, yeah, the way this series is going, the way this season is going, well, not the season, but the series has been going, I want to hope for the best. But
that's the thing. I get what you're saying. The Raptors are a much better team than the Pacers. They won a lot more games. They're more talented. They're a better team. But, you know, it only takes, and look, I'm very, very confident in them closing this out too. I think they do it in Indiana on Friday just because, personally, I don't know. Look, you mentioned momentum. That is a thing
it's
that...
It's got to be demoralizing for them.
That's the bigger thing to me.
Indiana had the game, like, they looked totally in control of it. They totally demoralized the city, and then they just watched it in 12 minutes just disappear. So it's like, that's got to count for something.
Paul George's tongue is still bleeding from biting it so hard in the post-game press conference.
Yeah, you could tell he was, like, barely hanging on. He so wanted to call out, like, Rodney Stuckey and Ty Lawson. And, like, that's the thing that gives me confidence going forward is, like, I mean, there have been a couple games here where the Pacers' secondary guys have exploded, but, like, the Pacers' secondary guys are bad. And, like, I don't really see it happening again, or at least twice in the series. Like, I think maybe it happens on Friday or in Game 6, but, like, I think the Raptors, like, the talent advantage will eventually even out, and the Raptors still have not played, you know, their best game. That's very cliche, but they really haven't. They've been pretty bad for, you know, probably half the series.
Yeah, the first half of Game 3 was really the only chunk that you can point to other than last night. And last night, you can't even say that was the Raptors playing the best game because those two lineups had never seen the floor together. The Raptors had never played like that before. It was completely new.
Yeah, so I just think eventually, that's why it's a seven-game series. Eventually the cream rises, and I mean, Indiana's...
What latitude, please?
Go ahead,
sorry,
Will.
Sorry.
You go ahead.
Yeah. The cream rises and the Pacers are about to feel the cream. Is that what you were...
feel the cream.
Yeah? Yeah, the cream's rising, right? This is why this is a terrible, terrible saying in 2016. Sorry, Sean. Will, confidence level entering Game 6. Not in the series. Give me your confidence level in them winning Game 6 because the Pacers are now fully aware that outside of Paul George, they're trash.
Well, definitely outside of Paul George, they're trash. That's number one. I think number two, that's the best the Pacers could have reasonably played. I mean, Rodney Stuckey probably plays a bit better, but I mean, Paul George, like, he's a weird polarizing player in that sense, because he's like 60% of the time he's like Kevin Durant level, and then 40% of the time he's like DeMar DeRozan level. It's weird. He's got like a high variance for a guy who's a star. That's not a great analysis. That's Blake's like, blood is boiling.
It's not boiling, just, you know what I would do for a guy who 40% of the time is DeMar DeRozan and 60% of the time is Kevin Durant?
Yeah, I know, right?
We have a guy who's DeMar DeRozan 100% of the time.
We have a guy who's DeMar DeRozan 40% of the time. And like Rodney Stuckey, 60% of the time. But, yeah, okay, so look, the Pacers, they got really hot in the first half, especially with three-point shooting. They made 11 three-pointers in the first half. They averaged like 8 on the season. They're not a good three-point shooting team, and it seemed crazy there were being so many. You saw it down the stretch. like, it's not like they're due for misses, but once they started missing, it started making a little bit more sense that, look, maybe George Hill's not going to hit every single three. And he missed a wide open three down the stretch. That would have, you know, cut into the Raptors' lead. And I think the Raptors have stumbled onto something here with this small ball lineup. I mean, Patrick Patterson did not make the obvious intended effect in terms of making the Raptors awesome. As his plus-minus would suggest, he had a pretty poor game, but...
The starting lineup wasn't bad, though. Minus two in 16 minutes. It was more when Biombo came in and it was Patterson,
yes.
Carroll propping up the bench-heavy units that they got rolled.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, even in the second unit, when they're playing the one center, three wing, one point guard looks, that's pretty effective, especially against Indiana that's playing Solomon Hill out there.
Is it interesting to you at all, or, you know, is it a shift in focus that the Raptors need to make or continue to make, that Valanciunas was such a huge asset early in the series when both the teams were a little bigger and he was punishing the Pacers' bigs. If the Raptors want to play two guards, two wings, or a guard and three wings like that, Biombo is the more natural center for that group because he's fast back in transition. He can switch onto guards, which, you know, makes it a little more playable with four smalls on the floor. And then the spacing concerns of having Biombo out there are less when you have four small guys. Do you see Biombo continuing to play a big role the rest of the series?
It's tricky because I think most of Biombo's contributions are dependent on JV. Sometimes JV has a really great game. You've seen it in game one, two, and even a bit in three. But you saw it in the start of game five. He had like three balls just bounce off his forehead. And he like missed like a layup just like wide open in the first quarter. And if he's struggling like that, it's nice to have a guy like Bismack Biombo who is a constant. No matter what happens in every game, Bismack is going to give you the same thing. And it's just a matter of finding the pieces around Bismack to make the offense work enough. And so, honestly, at this point, I would like some beer, yes? Is that what you're asking?
No, I wanted to chime in. You can have some beer, too, if you want.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
The whole HQ team wants to chime in. You've said something to upset.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, Bismack Biombo is great. And I think the one thing the Raptors have proven is that the Raptors can sort of outscore the Pacers with Bismack Biombo on the court, despite all the limitations that Bismack has. And so if you're going to play like the smaller lineups, Bismack does make a lot of sense. And if you have to ride Bismack, if that's how the game is going, if the Pacers go small, you can go small too, especially if you put Bismack on there.
Are you guys, just to get back to Valanciunas, are you guys kind of surprised at how poorly he played? Like, it wasn't like exactly poor, but he wasn't really used very much.
No, he was very poor yesterday.
I guess, but he wasn't really used very much. And, I mean, against... You know, once the Pacers have sort of cut down their big rotation, and Jan Mahimi can barely move at times, it looks like, out there. Miles Turner is awesome, but, like, he can't even dream of handling Valanciunas on post-ups. Are you surprised that they're not using him more often, or they didn't use him more often yesterday? Because I feel like that could have been a way for them to kickstart their offense, at least, you know, early
they
on.
They force-fed the ball to
they
him.
Tried that a lot in the first quarter, and he was not having
turned
a game.
Over it three times.
Yeah, he's had a tough time the last two games, even with Mahimi being banged up. For whatever reason, Valanciunas is having a really tough time getting deep post position against the Pacers. Maybe that's the Raptors need to improvise those post-ups a little more instead of just clearing out for him and, you know, have him set a screen and then roll down into post position, or, you know, have him set those little cuts along the baseline for the wings, or the screens along the baseline for the wings, sorry, and then kind of turn into a post-up. I'm not really sure, though. He hasn't been as effective on the boards. He, you know, he didn't quite look like himself, and then when the Pacers go super small and the Raptors want to match, like we talked about, Biombo defensively makes so much more sense, and then you don't need Valanciunas' offense as much, I guess. I still think what you're saying, though, I think they come out in Game 6, and like they have in several games in this series, they look to get JV going.
Yeah.
One more point on Biombo.
What's up?
Hornets fan.
Yeah.
Did you see this coming at all, like him being this good?
This
is Josh, by the way, everyone. He writes for Raptors Republic and At the Hive. Is that the Hornets?
At the Hive,
yeah,
baby.
He's really conflicted right now because the Hornets are playing.
Yeah, at the
and they also
and they're
play
playing
the
Raptors in the second
round.
Yeah.
If they get to the second round, yeah.
So we're gonna fight in the street.
Exactly.
He's gonna fight himself, man. He's Raptors and Hornets.
I'll be honest.
TI versus TIP
thing. I'm pretty irrational about Bismack Biombo, but I mean, he's done stuff like this in the past. It's just a matter of consistency with him. And, like, with something as simple as rebounding, it's just going out and getting the ball. And he's one of the most tenacious guys out there, like, in the entire league, I would say. So, like, he's capable of 16 rebound games, without a doubt. It's just a matter of whether or not he gets the opportunity. that said, I mean, what he does on offense still isn't what you want from him. So he's, you can't put him out there for that long, especially if Valanciunas is playing well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. That makes, I mean, that's been the story all year long when Biombo plays well. It's great, and it's such an awesome luxury to have, but Valanciunas is the better center overall and the guy, and I think they'll look in Game 6 to show that again, but it's really nice to know, again, as we've talked about, and kind of has been the story all year with the versatility and the different looks the Raptors can throw out there, if one thing doesn't work, you just move on to the next. You were going to say something?
I was just going to say, yeah, that when you're talking about the inconsistency, that's the thing with JV as well. I feel like that's, it's almost like the Raptors said, it's a luxury. We can throw a JV, see what happens. No good. Go to Biombo, see what happens. When one of them clicks, we get game five. When neither of them sort of make it happen, we get
game two.
Yeah, game four. Yeah.
Now, can I just add, Will, you're 23, 24?
23.
Would you say you're pretty inconsistent in your life, like day-to-day, your job performance, your attitude, your
yes,
sobriety?
I would say that is
sobriety is pretty consistent. Be one way.
But yeah, Valanciunas and Biombo are still very young, especially for big man. Which
especially
is,
for Bismack.
Man, Steve Simmons tiptoed so badly around a passport question today for Dwayne Casey where he basically said, like, how old is Biombo actually?
Didn't Casey say something about
yeah, he did joke about this, like, in a pregame, I think a couple weeks ago, where he was like, you know, he does a lot of this good stuff for a guy who's so, who's as young as him, who's 23, or if that's how old he is. Like, he actually, like, called it out.
That's happened before.
and
said he looks older. Than
yeah.
Him.
I mean, he is, I mean, this isn't basketball related, but he is just such a treat to have around, and, like, the impact for a young guy like that, without a ton of NBA experience to have on the locker room the way he does, and like this is stuff that like you don't really know if it has an impact, but like Biombo is a rallying force in that locker room in practice, on the bench. Him and Corey Joseph are kind of the leaders when Lowry and DeRozan are on the floor, and they're the guys that are very much paying attention to setting the tone. Biombo is grabbing Norman Powell, and he's grabbing DeLon Wright, and he's grabbing JB. And he's so great to have around. It sucks that he's probably going to leave. But it's something where, you know, him, Luis Scola, even bringing Corey Joseph in from the Spurs with all the playoff experience he has, there seems to be something, I think, to valuing the quality of the person as well as the quality of the player, because that goes into this mental toughness that the Raptors have talked about and Casey's always talked about but has never really had a roster that match. And now this, I mean, we're seeing it in this series where they really haven't played their best basketball, but they're getting it done in many games by sheer force of will and kind of personality.
Last night, that's what Biombo said after sort of his scrum broke up. His quote was like, I didn't know how we were gonna do it, but somehow we're gonna get back in that game. And the passion in which he said it, we're all just like, yeah, I believe that. Yeah.
He also just switched from speaking English to French during his presser today, which was...
He speaks Portuguese, I think, and Spanish, too. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's five languages total.
As well.
Cesaro.
Yeah.
Okay, let's double back. You were talking about Paul George and how Paul George is 40% of the time DeMar DeRozan.
Yes.
20% of the time in this series, DeMar DeRozan has been DeMar DeRozan. So, Will, I ask you, what about DeRozan?
What about DeRozan?
Excuse me, Doc.
If you guys have not checked out the YouTube video, just search "What About DeRozan" and take like 2 minutes of your life. It'll change everything. I promise. DeRozan, you know what? Actually, I thought a lot of DeRozan's improvements in Game 5 were very tangible decisions that Dwayne Casey put him into. Like, for example,
Fire Casey.
We're not going to do Fire
I'm
Casey.
I'm kidding. I'm not a part of that train. I thought he did a good job.
After Raptors wins, I don't write Fire Casey columns. Only after losses. I'm fickle like that. But, yeah, so Dwayne Casey, I mean, he shuffled up his lineups in Game 5 a lot more than any other lineup. And Dwayne Casey's always a guy that's about continuity. He's not exactly going to be the one that's going to be taking the first shot, first gamble. But he broke out that Lowry plus bench unit. He put DeRozan in there with them. And that was great because now DeRozan has minutes where he's able to play without Paul George on the court. Now he doesn't have, like, an all-world defender guarding him. He's able to go off. You saw DeRozan... He came out hot in Game 1 anyway, but the Raptors did a lot of good stuff, sort of running plays to get mismatches. They have like a three-man dribble weave thing that really causes a lot of, you know, perimeter switches. And when that happens, DeRozan's able to, you know,
continue being DeRozan, because a lot of DeRozan's struggles are because Paul George is so goddamn good defensively that, you know, you try to make it easier for him. And if, one of the ways you make it easier, you play against Rodney Stuckey. Shout out to Rodney Stuckey for a Game 5 victory.
He is a hero.
He's
more die trying.
That's right. Shout out to Curtis Jackson, who he looks a lot like. But
okay, so let me ask the question. I'll ask you, Sean.
Yeah.
The changes that the Raptors made, you know, one that the Pacers can combat is DeRozan when he goes out against those Georgia's lineups, because Paul George might play 48 minutes next game. He might have to. But in terms of the Raptors getting DeRozan more space by playing small, the having DeRozan act earlier in the shot clock, having DeRozan take fewer dribbles, are these changes that you see carrying over to Game 6 that the Pacers, you know, might not be able to counteract because the Raptors have kind of figured out how to get DeRozan going, or is it just one game?
I tend to agree. Like he talked about it yesterday. They did a few different things. They ran a few different sets that they haven't done so far in the series. And I just think, you know, Paul George is carrying such an offensive load in this series. And, you know, even Frank Vogel talked about this yesterday before the game. And he said that, you know, it would be nice if we could play, like, a shorter rotation. I'm stuck with a 9-man rotation. You can't play guys 48 minutes, otherwise they're not fresh. Which, I mean, I don't know. There were a couple of instances where DeRozan blew past George for, like, the first time in the series. Literally the first time in the series in the fourth quarter, the third quarter yesterday. And, you know, maybe that is a little bit of George tiring or wanting to save some for the offensive end, because, you know, he is their entire offense at that times. And you can only, you know, there's only one Kawhi Leonard. There's only one actual robot in the NBA. And
LeBron.
Sure, yeah, okay, yeah. LeBron also, too, but, over the course of a series like that, especially when DeRozan just keeps trying, even when it wasn't working, like, that's still a lot of work that George is doing to stop him, and eventually that's going to wear him down, and you got to save some for offense. So I think, yeah, I am reasonably confident in DeRozan coming around and having maybe he doesn't score 34 on 22 shots again into Game 6, but I think I don't think we're going to see the 5 for 19 that we did in Game 1.
He's not going to shoot 5 of 19 again.
That's true. 5 of 18 and
19. Yeah.
7 of 19 in his good game.
A lot of combinations still available for DeRozan.
The percentages are pretty similar.
Okay, so DeRozan's going a little bit now, and maybe the Pacers, to keep Paul George on the floor longer, keep him effective offensively longer, maybe he doesn't draw the DeRozan assignment quite as much. Maybe they trust, I don't know, Solomon Hill or CJ Miles, or, I don't know, there aren't good options, but
there really are no other options. Yeah. It's just Paul George. He's the whole team. Both offense and defense, right?
So, you know, this is the playoffs. The Bulls play Jimmy Butler 49 minutes a game in the regular season. Is there, like, the Pacers are going to play Paul George 48 minutes on Friday?
Well, I don't know if they have to play him 48 minutes, but they have to leverage the minutes a little more carefully. Right?
Like, maybe not benching Monte Ellis and George Hill at the same time?
That's number one. It's funny, because everyone ragged on Casey when he figured out that you could stagger Lowry and DeRozan's minutes, so they're always on the court, and then when he played that all bench lineup weirdly in Game 1 and, like, was bad, you figure that Vogel at some point has got to figure out some way to make it so that George is either not on the bench during critical moments, or, like, what he said in that game was that he was lagging at the end of the third quarter, and they figured they could weather the storm, which is a reasonable assumption given how the Raptors were playing.
And they were up 15.
Yeah, like, it's not an absurd idea that you could maybe weather a storm for a little while.
Well, here's the thing. If the Raptors were up 15 and Lowry and DeRozan had played those kind of minutes with those kind of loads, every Raptors fan would have been screaming, why are they both on the floor up 15 in the regular season?
Well, yes, yes, you're right. So you have to assume that Vogel's a smart coach. Well, you have to assume he would adjust that in some way. I don't really know why he keeps going back to the old bench lineups. It's amazing how quickly Ty Lawson, for example, has just fallen off the face of the planet. I don't know what happened to him. Well,
he drove up.
I know what happened to him. Moment of silence.
Oh, wow.
Sorry.
Everyone just groaned here. I don't know
if Ty Lawson's a bad man.
Drink responsibly.
Everybody.
Seriously. He takes a sip of beer. Anyway, so, I mean, you have to assume Vogel makes some adjustments, but I keep saying over and over again, I don't think there are any adjustments really for him to make at this point, other than just go with George as much as he can.
Hope Paul George scores 48 points and can play amazing defense for 48 minutes. Like, it's a tall order, man.
Yeah, if Paul George might be able to do it, but
yeah,
he probably can't do it two games
one,
in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
yes, knock on that. One more thing about this series, I guess, and it's, you know, maybe Paul George comes out and scores 48 points. One thing the Raptors still haven't really had is a Kyle Lowry over everything game. He's had good quarters. He's had good stretches. I thought he, despite not shooting well still, I thought he was great in the fourth quarter last night with the non-scoring things that he brought. And he did get a layup. He did get to the line. But it was more the passing. It was more the defensive energy.
Took a charge.
On his third attempt, drawing that exact same charge. I'm not worried about the quality of Lowry's play overall, but we talked about this a little bit before. Are you worried about Lowry's very sustained shooting slump?
Well, okay, so Bruce Arthur had it in his column, I think he was the only one who mentioned this, that he saw Lowry had, I think he called it a half golf ball sized lump on his elbow.
What's a half golf ball?
Maybe it was a golf ball, maybe I'm misquoting. My point is he mentioned that he had a lump on his elbow, basically implying that the sort of soreness that he had been dealing with is still hanging around. Lowry's one of these guys that's never going to say anything about being hurt, or he's never going to admit anything about that. So, but again, you look at the play, and it's like, he's missing the plays he made, like, automatic in the regular season. It's like, now he's janking layups, he's missing those pull-up threes that he always likes to take. It's a bit concerning, and I can't remember, I feel like he had one shooting game where he was decent.
It was like 8 of 19.
Yeah, 4 of 10 from 3 game, and he went 10 of 10 at the line.
What's funny is we were very encouraged by that, because he was missing free throws, like, at an insane rate of falling. So, it is a bit concerning, because as people have been talking about, the Raptors need him to be amazing Kyle Lowry if they're going to do anything serious. They maybe don't need him to be amazing to get past the Pacers, but if they're going to challenge anyone else, they definitely need him at 100%. And it is a bit disconcerting, because the DeRozan thing, you could point at different examples. Well, this is how his game is. Paul George is all over him. Blah blah blah, but Lowry always seems to find a way to do something, and it's very strange. And, like, you know, is George Hill taking him out of the game? That seems doubtful.
George Hill's pretty good.
Lowry's also getting an inordinate amount of open shots relative to his regular season diet, and he's just missing them.
Right. So again, it's weird. Anyway.
Yeah, the thing with Lowry though is that, you know, I mean, just consider what else is going on in the playoffs. He's like the healthiest point guard left in the NBA at this point, right? RIP Chris Paul. And, you know, he's the kind of guy who still, you know, he's not DeRozan, where DeRozan's not doing things offensively, he's a nothing defensively, right? Like, Lowry's still playing good defense on George Hill a little bit. Like, it's not as good as you would hope normally, but he's been adequate there. And then, you know, he's had these weird, like, a tap-out offensive rebound in the final minute yesterday.
That's huge.
Taking charges, you know, still initiating the offense. And he set up that... he still has the gravity when he's driving to the basket. He set up that DeRozan three that gave the Raptors the lead. So he's still doing effective things. Yeah, it sucks that he's not shooting well. And if the elbow thing is, I mean, would you guys be shocked at all if, you know, the day after the season ends, Lowry's going for elbow surgery? I don't know if I would be. Like, I don't know the nature of the injury, but, you know,
it sounds like
right
it's bursitis.
Yeah.
That's something I think Blake Griffin had surgery on it a couple years back, but, like, it's a thing that the range of recovery times and treatments is so wide.
He's definitely not doing anything about it now. He's going to play through it 100%, and that's it. And Sean, just want to say, Sean hit on the head. At least Lowry does all these other things. The intensity never wanes, and he's always cannonballing around the court.
He's shooting poorly. He's not playing poorly.
Yeah. But it would be nice if he could shoot better.
Should we do some questions?
We can do some questions. I have a question. What do we got for score?
That's a check, 17-14.
Oh, it's early stuff.
Oh. Okay.
20-14, Charlotte.
There you go.
Jeremy Lin on the come up. You want to talk about the best point guards left in the playoffs?
Jeremy Lin does not get the foul calls.
Have you seen how many foul calls he's getting in the playoffs right now, though? That worked.
Yeah.
That conspiracy, that conspiracy theory worked.
I'm thrilled, actually. I'd rather face the Hornets. Not that I'm underrated the Hornets. Seriously, man. The Hornets are a good team.
Don't worry, it's not the Blazers. You don't have to worry about them hearing every last comment of disrespect. Hashtag they. Is that what it is, they?
Hashtag they, yeah. Let's get on the hashtag they conversation.
Okay, before we do questions, Sean, do you want to do your regular segment on the Raptors HQ podcast?
Yeah, so if you guys listen to the headquarters, the podcast for RaptorsHQ.com.
They probably don't.
Probably not. It's definitely...
You should listen to it. It sounds like this, kind of.
With slightly better audio quality.
And we're on.
And I'm not involved.
No.
So, just you.
He was on one.
If you like Woodley specifically, listen to Woodley's podcast.
But so, at the end of every show, we do this thing called the episode sponsor, where we essentially go back and recall a former Raptors player and talk about our favorite memories from him. Usually it's a super depressing exercise full of Ben Uzo and the like.
Will Solomon.
We have not done Solomon Hill. but so yeah, that's our sort of pet segment at the end of every show. So right now, if you guys have any, you know, former Raptors, you know, obscure or otherwise, that you want to shout out and have us a riff on about.
Shout outs to
yeah.
Go.
Okay,
yeah.
Milk Glass.
Oh, oh man.
So we actually had him as one of our sponsors at one point. I think it was like episode 11 or 12 or something. I literally have no memory of anything Milk Palacio ever did for the Raptors. So I'm going to defer to you, Blake.
I have the weirdest memories of Milk Palacio. For one, so he was on the Raptors, I think, around the time that Pass the Cavassier came out. And I had a friend who I would watch basketball with who would always sing Pass the Palacio, which doesn't even work. It was the most annoying thing. So that is the first thing I think of. That and there's also like a frequent Raptors Republic tweeter whose at is Milk Palacio. And like one time he was in
Is it Milk Palacio?
No, I don't think so. But one time he was in the mailbag and a commenter was like, yo, it's so cool that Milk Palacio like sent in a question.
Yeah, we got readership.
Yeah,
like, you got readership.
Who has more followers, Milk Palacio or Smush Parker?
Oh, Smush Parker for sure.
Real Smush Parker is great. I mean, if you haven't seen that Twitter account, it is great. Once in a while he'll just tweet out like, fuck Kobe.
Yeah.
Kobe ruined my life. Things like this. It's good stuff. It's really the real
He really Smush enjoyed Parker. Kobe's last game.
No,
not at all.
He was like Vince Staples.
Okay, so Milk Palacio, I mean, as far as mediocre backup Raptors point guards go, he was a very mediocre Raptors backup point guard. He was garbage in NBA Live. I know that. Like, you basically had to...
He was a playable character?
Yeah.
He was like a 67 or something.
Alvin Williams was a starter at the time, right? So I think you had to ride Alvin Williams like 48 minutes, which is fine, because who wants to take Alvin Williams off the floor anyway? But, yeah, he
That's
was...
That's why he doesn't have any knees anymore.
Alright.
Has anyone been watching... How's Alvin Williams on the broadcast? He's out with Tim and Sid in the Jurassic Park.
Better than Mopede.
Yeah.
Yo, but that's like...
Way better.
You know, Mopede is disappointing, I'm sorry. I thought he would be better on the broadcast.
I'm not allowed to have a comment.
Okay, alright. Well, love Mopede. Just tell us stories about...
Sean works for
tell us stories about Jalen Rose. Tell us a story about Mike James. Tell a story about
Mike
Vince
James.
Vince Carter.
The Amityville score.
Yeah.
Mike James is my favorite random like Raptors trivia question of all time, just because you look through, it's like high scores in the season, and it's just this one year. Mike James.
Dude, he shot like 24% from deep.
20
he's original Steph Curry.
20 points a game. And then it's it. And then it just like you then it just fell off the face of the earth. And it just gradually disappeared.
Who else did Mike James play for?
He played
everyone.
For everyone. He played for Dallas, he played for Chicago,
he was signed by the Bulls afterwards. There you go.
Really?
Yeah.
He is my favorite Raptor. He was he talked about himself in the third person. He was very fired up.
What?
Yeah, man.
My favorite thing about him, so he's from Amityville, New York. The Amityville scorer on his shoes all the time, which is like
I didn't
the
know
best
that.
Nickname.
I just remember him doing the press conference and being like, you know, very fired up about Mike James. Mike James gonna score some points. And he's saying, all right, Mike James, take it easy, man.
He wasn't wrong. Mike James scored some points.
It was a bad Raptors team.
It was like 25-5.
He averaged 20 something. But anyway, the point is,
yeah.
It was a dark time. Was
this
time
was clearly not a playoff season, right?
No, this is an 05.
Chances
are
good that it was not a playoff
season. It was that weird year before, like the sort of like before, like Calderon and Barcani and like the Garbo Sentinels.
Oh, those normal years.
And Mauricio Garradini.
Alex, didn't we do this one time on your podcast? Didn't we just go through like a bunch of old trash
Raptors?
Pulled
up like basketball reference.
Yeah, we started with like Charlie Villanueva, I think, and we went through like all the players.
Charlie Villanueva.
That's the
R.I.P.
Steven.
LeBron!
Radio.
Yeah.
Listen to that podcast. It's great, actually.
Charlie Villanueva, quote, also an idiot.
I love
for Kevin Durant.
I love
Westbrook.
Evil Thunder. I think it's my favorite
thing.
It's
the best.
It's very annoying.
What?
I very much like this. He's an idiot.
They've reached 2014 Clippers level of hateability. But, alright, any other...
They're going to win the title, so...
You hate Russell Westbrook?
Any other names to just...
Oh.
Walter, what do you got?
David Anderson.
Oh,
the
Australian, Australian Kid Rock, I think.
The lefty.
I love you have a nickname on the tip of your tongue.
He looked like Kid Rock.
What year is this
The Page of Stock
year. With Page or is the return for Page?
I'm pretty sure it's the return for Page because he played for the Hornets.
Marcus Banks was involved in that too somewhere.
Why did we get Marcus Banks?
Marcus Banks played
Marcus
like three seasons
sucked.
With the
He's
Raptors.
So
no, and, he played like 80 minutes.
Yeah.
What? Jared Bayless got in that trade.
Jared Bayless. Oh. Actually, I had high hopes for Jared Bayless. Who had high hopes for Jared Bayless? That guy,
Summer League All-Star? Raise their hands.
Summer League MVP.
Yeah, I was super high on Jared Bayless in the draft.
Mr. Egghead.
Like, really. Like, I'm a UCLA fan, and I had him right there with Russell Westbrook. Like, these guys.
Just like we have Norm Powell.
This is the new Chris Paul and Deron Williams. This is Jared Bayless and Russell Westbrook. I really love Jared Bayless' weird-ass head.
Like, such a weird head. All right, more rap.
You had one over here.
Jake Boschel.
Jake Boschel.
It's a dick, apparently, according to TPJ.
Really?
That was a running joke. They would call him a dick.
Oh. I'm not privy to the back story there.
Yeah, me neither, really. They didn't really explain it.
Maybe he's just a dick.
Maybe. Jake Boschel? Really? He's
he
not
played,
really
well, he was a solid bench celebration guy, right? Like
for
he
like
was,
the 17 games he was a Raptor.
Yeah, he was like White Bazemore. Getting those dances on. I mean, he got dunked on a lot too, but also celebrated dunks.
That has a psychological effect on a person.
What year was this?
I would think so.
Again?
You're gonna find out. On June 12th.
I walked into that one. I know. That's all right. Just like you walked into that dunk. Oh!
If you don't follow them on Twitter, which if you're here, I don't understand that you don't follow both of these guys on Twitter. They have a long-running banter about them playing a one-on-one game that I don't think will ever actually happen.
Well, there's a Raptors Republic basketball tournament.
And as you can see, we're not exactly the most athletic minus Blake.
It's a 3-on-3 tournament.
Blake will literally dunk on
Look,
you. He's Drake Kilgannon in the flesh.
Okay, so this is the thing. It's a 3-on-3 tournament, and Dan is the type of player who is very much willing to turn a team game into a one-on-one showdown and try to trade bucket for bucket. I'm a team player. I'm a team concept guy. I'm not going to do that to my teammates like Dan. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go out and I'm going to lock Dan down. And it's going to be 0-0 because I'm going to let my teammates shine while I lock you down, and then your team...
You're not going to lock me down. That's the part, though.
Buddy, you were telling me yesterday that you are going to have to wear a knee brace.
I have to protect my left knee, yes. But you're not Ric Flair. You're not going to...
This has devolved quickly.
No. Mike's going to pull a deli move on you, man. Get on the ground.
The tables.
Yeah.
Grab some
Alex, you think Dellavedova is a human bedbug? Wait till I get
Alex
this guy.
Is like the least willing participant on the podcast ever. We keep going, Alex.
No, it's all about you guys. All right. Is there
Alex is like Andre Roberson. Every time you pass him the ball, he's passing it again, alright?
It would have been better if you could have referenced an old draft.
Yeah.
Not a future
round. I thought you were going to go with
Landry Fields.
Which
I
was
Landry
Fields.
Yeah. Landry
Fields.
When
his arm just
you're
like
creating
hard
for Landry Fields over there. You're like Kyle Lowry when he crossed up a guy and he passed it over to Landry Fields. That was a great moment last year.
That was one of my favorite Raptors games ever. That was the Bucks game, right? Where the Raptors...
It's like either Bucks or Magic.
It was the Bucks. The Raptors blew out the Bucks by like 48.
Oh, that was
the
Bucks.
Brutal game.
That was the Bruno game. That was
the fourth
Bucks,
quarter.
Yeah.
He had 8 points. It was beautiful. But the best part was the Landry Fields... It was actually a two. His foot was on the line, so it kind of killed it. But yeah, the three
left
that took about 8 seconds to wind up.
Was it the
like,
one he shot left-handed
yeah,
too after
sure,
practicing
yeah.
it all
yeah.
year to save his career?
Poor Landry.
Yeah.
He did not manage to save his career.
That's another random Raptor right there.
Is that enough sadness for... We get
you know what?
I think that's enough
no,
sadness.
Yeah. Let's talk about Landry Fields for a quick second.
Okay.
Why did we sign him just in an effort to lure Steve Nash?
Brian Colangelo.
That was a horrible move.
What about DeRozan, man?
Yeah, what about DeRozan? Seriously, don't draft Terrence Ross. That's what the whole.
All right, so where are we going with this now?
Okay, I think we're gonna take some questions.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
there are people left here for some reason.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I guess there's alcohol. Okay. Well, question. This gentleman was first. What's your name, man? Sorry.
Ramsey. Yeah.
What's up, man? Hit us.
How you doing?
So. Is that your question?
No.
Great.
Speaking of Colangelo, how do you think he'll do with the Sixers?
That's a really interesting question because Colangelo's history is so, I mean, it's all gray area because he was very good at some things as much as people don't want to give him credit for it. He, other than Bargnani, he drafted pretty well. He got
Bargnani's a defensible pick.
Yeah, Bargnani is a defensible pick if you rewind and don't, you know, revisionist history what the rankings were.
You know, Chris Bosh wanted LaMarcus Aldridge, and then he said, fuck Chris Bosh, and let's get Andre Bargnani. So.
Look, I want Brandon Roy, so I would have been wrong, too.
Yeah.
He would have been fine for like 5 years.
Yeah. I think it's very telling that he said he was going to speed up the process. That's the only thing. I know it's a cute thing for him to say, but it's like that's the concern with Colangelo, that if he suddenly has to be like, well, I got to sign guys. Like, if he's going to throw in like a big contract like Harrison Barnes or something, they're going to suddenly become, they're going to hit that ceiling pretty quick.
Brian Colangelo make a panic move?
Did you just say if he throws a max at Harrison Barnes?
That's what I'm saying, right, yes, yes. That's what I mean. That's the concern. I asked him some questions for some, for our, one of the other Sixers.
Liberty?
Yeah, for the Liberty Ballers, and I was saying that's the concern. He's pretty savvy in like sort of finding players, making moves, correcting moves, which not all GMs do very quickly, but the problem is he's always putting himself behind the eight ball, and that happened with the Raptors. He'd make a move and you go, okay, let's see where this goes. It'd be bad. Then he'd get out from underneath that move. Then you go, then that'd be bad. Then he'd make another move. It's like, just make one move and just that's it.
So
just be
this is the thing. Hyper-aggression is good and it's bad.
Get your man
yes.
Both.
Yeah.
Follow-up question to that. Do you think we can trade Terrence Ross to the Sixers?
I would look into it. I think Terrence Ross was signed to his deal. I know that's maybe mostly a joke, but I think Terrence Ross was signed to his deal at the time he was, at the price he was, as much of a bet on the market as Terrence Ross. Yeah, it's great that Terrence Ross has turned his play around, shot 40% from three from December 7th on,
which
or
is
whatever
important.
It is. Very important.
We're
you see how
his used car very well right now.
No lemon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think part of that was that's going to be a tradable asset when teams get in the market and start scrambling, and Harrison Barnes is signing for the max, and Ken Bazemore is signing for more, and Evan Fournier is signing for more than Terrence Ross got. I think that becomes not an attractive trade chip necessarily, but certainly a movable one and maybe a plan C for
it's
some teams.
It's a fixed cost. You've got a price that you know.
Exactly, and Terrence Ross does one thing that's really important pretty well, as much as he does a lot of other things up and down.
The Celtics would like to have him right now, for example. They'd love to have
him.
He's
literally
been
the best three-point shooter on the Celtics, and the Celtics are a playoff team.
And then you don't... The Raptors didn't think this at the time, and Norman Powell hasn't ascended enough to where you can reliably pencil him in to shoot threes, but the fact that he has shown already that he's a rotation player, maybe ahead of schedule, you know, you can't say that he's going to be better than Ross for sure. The sample is just too small, and Ross's shooting is so important to what the Raptors' bench-heavy units do, but you now have another guy who can play the two, play a little bit of three, guard some ones like Terrence Ross does when he plays that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope role against some quicker ones. You have a ton of flexibility, and the Ross deal was about that, the Valanciunas deal was about that. Having Norman Powell on a minimum contract for two more years really opens up that flexibility too. So, you know, whether it's Philly or not, I think Ross is definitely a guy that they'll listen to and they'll shop, and, you know, maybe he's a guy you can attach a pick to and get something seriously, like a difference maker
forward.
Back. On
no, they have a starting forward.
What we're going to get from the Sixers? Carl Andrew?
Well, that's the other thing. If you trade anyone to the Sixers, there's no value. There's no one there.
Nick Stauskas?
Well, thing is that the Sixers, it depends what you want to do. The Sixers have a ton of cap space. So you can trade Terrence Ross into cap space, and in the process, you know, I don't think it's the best. I don't think it's the best. A three-way trade's one. I don't think it's the best use necessarily of assets this summer, but re-signing Bismack Biyombo becomes a really high priority. You don't have any exceptions, and you don't have the salary cap space because you don't have his bird rights either. You can't just re-sign Biyombo to a substantial raise. I think you can give him like 120% of what he's making right now, which is not going to be enough. If he's a guy that you really feel strongly about keeping, or if there's another free agent that you want to use into the room before DeRozan's cap hold becomes his max contract, if he's re-signing, you know, unloading Terrence Ross is a way to open up 10 or 11 million of cap space, and that makes... You know, again, it goes back to flexibility, and I thought betting on Terrence Ross a year before you really had to, before you had all that information, was risky, but it was a bet on the market, and the Raptors are going to enter the offseason with not a lot of cap room, but a lot of flexibility in what they can do.
And then if you don't trade Terrence Ross, you just have extra depth at the wing, which is something the Raptors have always wanted. So
especially if they play three wings.
It's depth, it's versatility, it's shooting. Like it's,
when they sign Nick Batum,
Nick
Batum, and they're starting DeRozan, Batum, Carroll, and you need wings.
Josh is crying right now.
It's depressing. Half of him is crying. One eye is crying.
Any other questions? Well,
Chris Wallace.
I mean, Raptors fans are kind of used to suffering at this point, so I still feel like there's a very real possibility that they could still lose the series.
Why would you say these things?
Yo, I'm going to take a downer, man. I don't care.
All right.
But like, if that's the case, like heading into next season, what does this team look like? Do you see like Casey
it looks like
the Seattle
Supersonics.
Or like, what do they look like?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what they look like because no one's looking at them.
Yeah.
Here's
yeah.
my thing.
Right.
Casey's gone for sure. If you lose a series.
Yeah. Does deserved or otherwise, you can't sell the fan base on a coach coming back after 3 first-round exits. I like Casey. I'm 4th on my Coach of the Year ballot. I think he gets a pretty
a
bad
coach,
rap.
Yeah.
He's a very solid 82-game and system coach, but you can't. No one can wear 3 first-round exits in a row. But in terms of roster stuff,
well, I do think. I mean, I'm not insider here. Information or anything, but I think DeRozan's probably. Like,
what
I mean,
about DeRozan?
You got to bring DeRozan back. I think just as a piece of asset management. I think you can't just let him walk for nothing. If there's maybe something you can do at the draft with maybe that's where Terrence Ross's contract comes into play. Maybe you can, although you actually can't trade that contract before
the
draft anyway, right?
The poison pill exists.
Yeah.
I mean, you
yeah.
can trade it. You do one of those bullshit deals
yeah,
where
sure.
the trade happens and everyone knows that the Raptors are actually picking Norman Powell
sure,
with
sure.
the 46th pick, but it can't become official until July 1st.
So. Sure, sure. So, yeah, maybe, you know, if there's a way that they can upgrade on the wing. I mean, I don't think there's going to be enough money to sign Nick Batum realistically. I think
it's possible.
I think the number right now is...
Didn't you just sign
if Johnson... Yeah.
What do you need?
I think once the extensions for Ross and Valanciunas kick in, plus if Scola, Johnson, Biombo, and DeRozan are gone, I think it's about $18.8 million in the cap, which is just not going to be enough for Batum.
It's
so.
Awesome.
Well, so,
he's
yeah,
done the math, all right? Don't make him explain it.
So I did the math. Okay, I did the math when I got asked about,
of course
Kevin,
he did
about
the
whether
math.
Kevin Durant was actually financially possible. And,
it's definitely possible.
Nick Batum and Kevin Durant are in the same max class for right now, so... That's why it's possible. If you think Kevin Durant's possible, maybe
okay.
possible.
The bottom line here is this is a depressing question, and we're not going to lose the first round.
And
sports.
Who hurt you, fam?
Well,
okay,
but look, he's not wrong that
that's
this series
question.
Is not
fair
over.
Question. But okay, like as a follow up question, say they get to the second round, then
yeah.
God forbid they get like their asses handed to them by like the Miami Heat, for example. Does that change anything with the roster for next season?
I think it's very similar to if they were to lose in the first round. Like maybe if they got swept in the first round by the Pacers and got their asses kicked,
yeah.
maybe there's more sweeping changes. I think at this point it's like I think a second round loss is pretty much the same as a first round loss would be at this point.
Regardless of how the Raptors lose in the playoffs, in terms of an asset management perspective, unless you can sign a better player than DeMar DeRozan, you re-sign DeMar DeRozan. I know we're all a little bit disenchanted with DeMar right now, but you look at DeMar, he's first of all he's in the prime of his career. He's 26. He's been healthy his entire career.
He's very durable. That's like
very
underrated, durable. Underrated in his, except for that 120-game stretch he's been on.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a great, humble star. I mean, that sounds like a weird thing to say, but, like, you even look at Jimmy Butler, for example, who never had a character rap at all. But then, you know, now he's gone into a little bit of stardom. You're starting to see some drama happen in Chicago. Never any drama with DeMar DeRozan. You re-signed DeMar. He's been a great guy for your team, and I know we're all disenchanted, but as if you can sign a guy who gave you 23-4-4 in the regular season, who's able to stay healthy, you keep that asset, and if the team continues to struggle, at least you have an asset to trade later on than just nothing.
That's the important thing, is that DeRozan is a max player in this market, and the worst case, if you sign him, barring an injury, that's a tradable deal for 2 or 3 seasons if things go south. And I don't even know if people are frustrated with DeRozan, but like, I didn't expect DeRozan to be as bad as he was over the first 4 games, but I expected Paul George to do a pretty good job locking him down. Like this is the thing with evaluating the offseason based on a playoff series or what happens in the next playoff series, is Masai Ujiri has tons and tons of data, intimate data on these guys at a personal and professional level. I don't think he's the type to get swung by, you know, if it comes down to a single possession in a game 7 or something like that, or, you know, if injury strikes and they get swept in the second round or something like that. I had another point to make and I lost it, but I'll find it.
That's
later.
Okay. Meant to be.
Yeah, I'll find
be
it later. Oh, the other point was, you said there's no difference between them going out in the first round and the second round. I disagree. I think that's the same in basketball terms and in terms of evaluating what this team's ceiling might be as currently constructed. You can better sell a team that has made tangible progress in the playoffs. And don't forget, if they win this playoff round, it'll be the first time they've ever won a 7-game playoff series. This would be unquestionably the best season in franchise history. So you can sell keeping Casey, you can sell keeping the core together, and saying, look, we've got these young guys. Valanciunas is young, Ross is young, Powell's young.
I guess I was more looking at it from a roster standpoint. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But I mean in terms of what they may do, and if there's any pressure from MLSE, which I don't think there is, but
you know, it's an easier sell that, hey, we took this step. Everyone's still pretty young other than Lowry, who's in kind of the last year of his peak next year, maybe.
That's a bigger question.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. 30-year-old point guards.
Yeah.
30-year-old anythings, right? I'm 30 next week is the joke. There.
Happy birthday, Blake.
No, it's not my birthday.
Happy.
Anyway, so I think that's the big difference is that you can sell to the fan base that we took a step forward and our core is still very, very young in a pretty wide open East, unless the Celtics get Durant or Horford.
Celtics aren't getting shit, all right? Yo, I hate the Celtics. I'm just going to put it on record here. I just like
William, William Lewis had, I think, two or three beers then?
Yeah, the next segment of the podcast is just,
have,
is just Will
just,
getting
just
super
like
salty about stuff.
Yo, look, the Celtics
he's
best three-point shooter.
He's leaning on his table pretty hard.
The Celtics best three-point shooter is Kelly Olynyk, okay?
Yo, what do you think about Brad Stevens?
Overrated.
Wow.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, Mars, look, this guy, this guy's all about drawing up plays, but what, he's like 26 in points per after timeout play. So, I mean, how does that happen?
Dwayne Casey, the ATO god.
Dwayne Casey, the ATO god, all right? I mean, you saw the play he drew up for.
Any
Corey
other
Joseph
questions?
Hit that three.
Any other questions?
Sure. Yeah.
What's up?
Yeah, so I know it's...
Sorry, man, what's your name?
Oh, Brandon.
Brandon.
Yeah.
Good to meet you, man.
Thank you. So you guys, too. I listen to you guys regularly, too.
Sorry, man.
Are you a Republican
guy or
an HQ guy? Oh,
we're still working on the listener show.
So I know it's a little early to be thinking this. We're still in the midst of such an intense series and potentially more. But considering that we've got, like, what, two first-round picks.
Mm.
Thank you, Masai. And considering the fact that this guy just recently kind of threw himself into the draft, what are your thoughts on that Thon Maker? And maybe... throwing out one of the later picks, or depending on how he doesn't work out, the lottery pick. I mean, depending on how he doesn't work out.
Thon Maker.
Maybe stash.
We were just talking about this before.
Yeah, we were talking about this before, and I was using it as an example of kind of not just the value of the D-League, but where the D-League is going and how a prospect like Thon Maker may, after the 2017 CBA, be a way more realistic first-round option if there are things like flex roster spots or guys on two-way contracts. The Raptors have seen the last 2 years how hard it is to commit a roster spot to a guy who's strictly a development project in Bruno Caboclo. Bruno's going to enter next season as, once again, a development project. I think he could see some, like, DeLon Wright-ish minutes where they bring him up and down just to see how he's coming along, but he's going to be essentially a wasted roster spot again next year. So the issue with drafting Thon Maker then is that, one, if he goes overseas and you stash him overseas, he'll make a little bit of money, but like he's probably not going to play a lot if it's an elite league and you're not in control of his development. It's not like Jonas Valanciunas' situation where he was already playing big minutes and, you know, I think the Raptors sent a staffer over there to kind of be with Valanciunas and bring him along. The question then, I guess, becomes for Thon Maker is, would you agree to do what, say, Josh Huestis did for the Oklahoma City Thunder the other year, where he was a first-round pick, and he said, you can stash me in the D-League for a year. I will sign the waiver that I'm not signing my entry-level contract. I'll play in the D-League for a year, and it's a handshake understanding that eventually he'll get that NBA contract. If Maker will do that, then that's an intriguing option, not with a top 10 pick, with the number 27 pick, if he's still there, and he might be, then you can have him in the D-League, and he's not developing on the NBA team's dime, and he's not eating a roster spot. But if he's not willing to do that, I don't see a scenario where you can develop him and Bruno and also be competitive. I think they learned this year when they started the year with five guys, and maybe even three is too many over the course of 82 games.
Yeah. It started to become a problem with that's why with Bennett, finally, when they cut Bennett to get Thompson, you saw like it was like to have a third of your team just be like non... I mean, Powell became a usable player, but from... Two-thirds of the season was like five players were just unusable.
And then you have Anthony Bennett guarding Dirk Nowitzki.
And look at if you had wanted to bench Scola or rest Scola down the stretch if you're starting Anthony Bennett.
Thompson became very valuable out of nowhere just because you could throw him out.
Game six starting power forward, Jason Thompson.
It's not an insane idea, but anyway.
It's not an insane idea.
It's not a good idea, but it's not an insane idea. That was a long-winded answer, but I just... Unless he's willing to do that, and the issue with that is a D-League max salary, if you're not an NBA assignee, is $25,500. So I don't. If he's eschewing college and getting that early eligibility to enter the NBA, I'm not sure if a guy like that's willing. I don't know him at all, or like what his family situation is or anything. That's a tough road.
And they're obviously still have to decide what they want to do with with, well, Powell, I guess you figure he's going to play next year, but Bebe as well, in terms of how many roster spots they're going to have for guys who don't play.
Well, see, that's what I'm thinking with a guy like Bebe. We don't know what Biombo's going to do, but we have Bebe. We've developed him for a couple years, too. So maybe the fact that he's going to get more minutes.
I think there's some thinking that there is the idea that, yeah, that Biombo, if Biombo walks, then Bebe's the guy you spent all this time developing, and unlike Bruno, he's shown that he can at least play in spurts, and not maybe not super effectively, but he's there.
Yeah.
And you have
he
to assume
stressed right now.
But you have to assume that if the Raptors are going to sit on this guy, they obviously believe in something in him.
Yeah.
And now those guys under like Powell is the extreme case of this, where they are under very reasonable contracts. Where now, if you can play them, it frees up all this space to then do other things to try and fill your roster somewhere else. Now Blake's going to tell me the real answer.
No, no. It's just, go ahead, Blake. The note on Bebe is that, like, he absolutely...
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Bebe? What did Herbie Kuhn get here?
Whoa! Sorry. It's all this water,
the
man.
The hurricane?
All
this little hurricane, whatever?
Who made
Lil' Chris?
Lil' Chris? Is that who made it?
Hurricane
Lucas Nogueira, yeah.
Bebe.
He's
a high-level player, as you know.
High-level. He shouts high-level at me all the time, just because, like, it was a weird D-League thing, and he... Now he shouts it at me all the time. It's very strange. Anyway, I think the thing with him is they are in a position where they absolutely should be expecting something from him next year. It'll be his third NBA season. This is a guy who was playing big minutes in the Spanish ACB League and won a Defensive Player of the Year there the year he was drafted and stashed. I think that Masai Ujiri is a believer that he can play. I know the 905 think he can play. I know Lucas thinks he can play. Dwayne Casey today was talking about Norman Powell and spoke... He was speaking highly of all the young guys, but he specifically said, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is the point, that Norman Powell and DeLon Wright are closer to contributing than the other guys, which, you know, Nogueira's going to be, I think, 24 at some point next season in his third year in the NBA after having played big overseas minutes. I don't think he has much of Casey's trust.
Nogueira's a very interesting locker room presence, let's just say that.
He's fun to talk to. There's a question over there.
Yeah, so...
Hey, what's your name, sir?
Thomas.
Good to meet you, Thomas.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming up.
No problem. So for the next two games in this series...
One game.
Well, two,
you sound like Biombo right now. Biombo said that he's looking forward to game seven.
One game.
He misspoke, but yeah.
What would you rather give up? Paul George having a monstrous night, or letting Solomon and George Hill just daring them to score 20 on us again?
If George has a monster night, then it's one of those things where you're like, wow, you got beat by a superstar player.
I can live
with
that. Yeah.
When these guys... Like,
well, you might not get beat, I think, is his point.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When Hill is like... He had that crazy shot where he banked in something. It's like, when those guys are killing you, it really grinds my gears. So I'm fine with George going and doing whatever he wants. The other Pacers are, by comparison, scrubs, and I want the Raptors to annihilate Chris. Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
I'm buying a Solomon Hill jersey. If he goes 4-4,
is it like some sort of reverse voodoo? Or
he's
God,
he's still working on his.
I'm buying a Solomon Hill jersey on one square in game 7. Solomon Hill jersey. And letting myself get destroyed by the fans. I'm sacrificing my body and a small amount of money.
What does this have to do with Thomas's question?
Don't let Paul George. Let dare Solomon Hill to beat you again. That's
really?
What I want.
Okay, so
we've
got some disagreement.
Can you help on defense with those wide open looks?
Don't leave them wide open. Like, you don't need to send so much help if, like, Ty Lawson's going to the basket. You don't need to double him, especially if Bismack Biyombo's there. Be smart about it, right? But if you have to leave Solomon Hill open, leave the guy open, man. Come on.
Yeah, I think there's...
Did anybody here know Solomon Hill before this playoff series? Like, at the trade deadline, there was, like, literally a Mark Stein report that said the Pacers are willing to give away Solomon Hill for anything. And nobody traded for him. The guy cost $1.5 million. I wish the Raptors had traded for him, actually, because it would have been nice to not place.
One of those mega trade deadline mailbags I did, someone suggested James Johnson for Solomon Hill. And I was like...
What a irrelevant
I was like, would anyone notice?
People
James,
would notice. The
James
guys doesn't notice.
James, you look weird today.
This just goes back to what I said earlier on, where just the Pacers' secondary guys are so unreliable and so, like, let's be frank, crap, that I think you're okay with, you know, putting all your attention in Paul George and then just sort of letting those guys sort of beat you if they can, right? It's like Paul George, yeah, he's probably going to get his anyway, but, like, you can't let him go off like he did in those first three quarters because the Raptors aren't going to have a fourth quarter like they did yesterday.
Whoa!
I think one thing about you know, last night was maybe an exception. But if your question is, you know, you assume if George is going off, you're shutting down the other guys, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
I, to me, that says that the Raptors have done a good job controlling the ball at the offensive end and slowing down the Pacers' transition game, because most of George's points in a game that plays out like that are going to be half-court shots. They're going to be late clock, probably.
Where he's just very, very good.
Yeah.
Yes, and as well as the Raptors playing super fast and super small last night, they prefer to play a slower, grinded-out style. I think if they were forced to choose, they would choose the George going off option if that meant the Pacers' other guys weren't going off because the transition game had slowed down. And I think, you know, that's the key that the Raptors were hammering at practice today and have been through most of the series, is they think that's the key to beating Indiana. They know Paul George is Paul George, but if they can stop the transition game, they think that's the key to kind of suffocating what Indiana can do. And it's true, because George should score 50 points, and the Pacers might score 50 points. Because, again, Ty Lawson, Rodney Stuckey, these guys suck.
Indiana's offense is, outside of their transition game and a couple of like sort of weird wrinkles they run, their offense is awful, right? So yeah, you're totally hitting the nail on the head with the transition thing. And like, they were so bad, and just...
The Raptors' offense isn't exactly the triangle.
Well, no, the Raptors...
The triangle.
But the Raptors' offense... the Raptors' offense, though, likes to play that similar kind of slow grinded out. They've been trying to get more looks early in semi-transition, but if those aren't there, they're completely fine, you know, dribbling out to 10, 12 seconds and then getting into their sets. And those slower games... I don't know. I think they'd be comfortable playing like that. It's tough to say that because last night they had this awesome comeback playing super fast and matching this frenetic pace from the Pacers and doing what the Pacers like to do better than the Pacers do it. But that's not how the Raptors prefer to play. It turns out they're pretty good at it for one night, and I think they'd be good at it moving forward. But I think they'd prefer the George going off in a slower game option.
Actually, a stat I came across yesterday after the shoot-around conversation with Casey is, you know, the Raptors were the most efficient fast break team in the league this year. You know, more so than the Pacers. Like, they can beat the Pacers at their own game if they want to as well. So, any more questions?
All right, yeah, just keep going.
Okay, this one is...
So, what's your name, man?
Michael.
Good to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you guys. Follow you guys online. This is completely void of statistics and everything, but how do you feel the fans can play any sort of effect in Indiana? Because obviously a lot of Raptors fans, you know, bought tickets to Game 6. Do you think that has any bearing on the feel for both teams, for any either team?
I feel like it's got to be demoralizing for Indiana. I don't know how much effect it has on them, but it's like you heard about the Raptors, like, tickets are sold out, tickets are expensive, Jurassic Park is full of thousands of people, hundreds of people, whatever it is, Indiana. Oh yeah, tickets are still available. They were announcing tickets are still available. They were giving tickets away. It's like, what is going on? Does that affect? Is Paul George sitting in the locker room going, I can't believe fans aren't here. I don't know. I'm not going to play as well. Probably not. But it's like, but it's got to be a little bit crushing. I mean, last night
he admitted
the game was.
Yeah.
The
George
game was,
admitted last night that the crowd
was
shocked the Pacers.
Yeah. Well, the first half, due a little bit to that 6 p.m. start, it was a little bit slow getting going. And that we sort of knew that was going to happen, but it was a little slow getting going. And
also
then of course,
their necks stomped.
Well, yeah. That, yeah. And then
I mean, the Raptors started at 7:30.
Yeah.
Once
and,
it's, once
and game ops didn't really help either, because the game ops were terrible. But it factors in. I guess it's not something that got hurt at this point. You've got fans. Like, if they had played Detroit, it would have been crazy. It would have been half Raptors fans in Detroit
It would have been all Raptors.
I was going back and forth with a Pistons writer. We were going to do a Q&A if the Raptors had played the Pistons. And I asked if he could do the Q&A. He's like, yeah, can you make sure none of your fans come to our arena if they play? Like, that was, they were legitimately terrified of that.
I would have been there.
Yeah.
Not that I would have gone to cover, but like, I mean, it's close. And like, you would have had those Masai Ujiri-led buses going down like you did during the regular season. But to answer your question, I think, look, Paul George and some of the other Pacers talked about how the crowd kind of shook them last night, and it was tough for them to find their energy again once they had lost it. And the Raptors pay a lot of lip service to how much the ACC crowd has helped them all year. They were terrific at home after that. I think they started 4-4 at home, and then they were just basically unbeatable from there. That stuff's hard to measure, and we don't really know beyond that, like, players when they're at home are supposed to say those things, but it probably helps. When Norman Powell says, all I knew when I was going up for that dunk is that I had to throw it down hard because I knew how the crowd would react. And Paul George is saying that, yeah, we couldn't get our energy back because the ACC was nuts. You know, the Raptors fans aren't going to take over Bankers Life Fieldhouse, but if they show up and there's, I don't know, 3,000 of them, which is, I think, what they estimated for
really?
The last game. I think they estimated 3,000 or 3,500 or something like that for the last game.
Spare time.
If there's enough there that if the Raptors make a run or the Pacers are stumbling, there's a We the North or Let's Go Raptors chant, like, it maybe doesn't matter, but it maybe does. So, and that's sweet. And I think it's huge for the franchise that the fan base travels so well, and like maybe it doesn't make a difference, but it's still like a cool thing to be for the fans to be able to hang their hat on and say that no arena is safe from Raptors fans.
It's much cooler having over like fans that are everywhere as opposed to fans that are nowhere. There's teams that you know the teams in the league where it's like they can't fill their own arena.
The Pacers.
So yeah, there's a whole bunch of teams that feels like they can't give tickets away. So the fact that the Raptors are like on the forefront of like we're everywhere. There's tons of fans. It's crazy. It's like that's much cooler than.
Yeah.
Do you have a question there, Ramsey?
Yes.
Well,
I did.
So this is like NBA related. So we have the 2017 pick for the Clippers, and the Clippers in the past couple days have sort of atrophied. There's Chris Paul's out, Blake Griffin's out, and this is supposed to be their year. Do you see the Clippers making the playoffs next year?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So to clarify for anyone
yeah.
who doesn't know, the pick is lottery protected. So if the Clippers were to miss the playoffs in 2017, the pick wouldn't convey. I think it's lottery protected again in 2018, and then it would become two second-round picks in 2019. So the Raptors...
Two norms? That's not bad.
Or a Norm and a P.J. Tucker.
Wow, P.J. Tucker.
Wow, what a
dream.
The only
time Frangelo ever hit on a second-round pick,
exactly.
By the way.
The only time the Raptors have been on a second-round pick.
To
go back to your earlier
Frangelo question. And they probably let him go.
Good first-round picks, bad second-round picks.
Some Roko Ukic.
No.
Giorgio Sprintezic.
Your old slow car is still out there somewhere. No, they're not going to miss the playoffs because they're going to get rid of one of those three guys, and it'll probably be Blake Griffin, and they'll still have Chris Paul and Jordan.
And it's also going to be a win-win trick.
Yeah, they're going to get value back. They're not going to be that bad. They're not going to fall apart next year.
Okay.
They're going to trade Blake Griffin for Terrence Ross and Patrick Patterson.
That trio of players, it's clear that after 5 years, it's like we were just talking about the Raptors. It's like something has to budge if you don't go that many years and don't get far enough. Now, for them, it's not the first round. It's not even the second round. It's the third round, the finals.
And Doc Rivers has pretty much admitted that.
Yeah, so at a certain point, you have to look and go, I read a piece today about this, I thought it was really good, about how like the three guys are all very good in their own way, but they don't quite complement each other well enough. So when you have, and every time one of Paul or Griffin are out, the other guy goes just as good or better. And when Paul has to run the team with just Jordan, great. When Griffin has to run the team and facilitate those things, great. They're both there. It's like they're both good, but they both get in each other's
positions.
Way a little bit, and it's like not bad. Like they're not. It's not. That's not a bad problem to have. But it's like they don't get. They're not good enough. So you think if you can flip Griffin for something else, or I mean, obviously they're kind of already thinking that because of all the fiasco that happened this year for them. Anyway.
And it's also with the Soto.
It's also
yeah.
not as if
yeah, yeah.
like the it's not as if the Western Conference is loaded with teams that are like itching. I mean, Utah will probably make it next year. I don't know what'll happen with Dallas.
I guess Utah forever.
Yeah.
The Timberwolves are
being the one seed. So like, yeah, there's that. But don't worry.
Jamal
Murray is
our number
so
two
good
on
the Timberwolves.
No, we cannot let the Timberwolves get Jamal Murray. All right, this is
going to be
so
good.
The North.
What do you need a shooting guard if you have Ricky Rubio at the one and Andrew Wiggins on the three? You need
Zach
a guy
Levine.
Who can just shoot.
You need Zach Levine.
No, Zach Levine comes off the bench. Jamal Murray's good.
We're getting Jamal Murray.
Anyway, next question.
Yeah.
You think anyone's desperate enough to throw money at Dwight Howard?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, there will be teams.
Everyone's
gonna.
I wanted to say no because it's so depressing to think about that. But
every team is. There's like 20 teams that are gonna have max cap space this summer. Someone will strike out on something else. Someone will strike out on Al Horford and think, hey, Dwight Howard used to be good. Let's give him money.
Hey, Dwight Howard wasn't bad this year. It was better than he looked the last
he
couple
was
years.
Bad
he wore down
stretch,
a little bit toward
yeah.
the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's useful.
Problem,
he's not max useful.
At a certain at a certain point, the problem is him. That's all I'm going
to
say.
I'm just really excited for him to go back to
James
the Magic.
Harden, too.
Yeah.
And what the Magic is going to be a blast.
In a few years, the problem will be
with the Mavericks.
That is probably going to happen.
Chandler Parsons is very great at luring centers.
Yeah, but there's no way Cuban gives him big money.
Why not? Why not?
Yeah, try to sell him on a
he's delusional. He's
a 2-year deal. Go for try to get him on a 2-year deal.
This is the guy that employs Raymond Felton right now.
They brought J.J. Barea back to the fold.
Look, Mark Cuban doesn't think Russell Westbrook's a superstar. What he might think of Dwight Howard is anyone's guess.
Is that all we got?
Anyone else? Any other questions? You got it?
Oh, wait. I got a question for you
okay.
guys. What's up? Since the Raptors are going to win Game 6 and we're going to answer the second round for the first time since 2001, who would you guys like to see in the first second round? The Heat or the Hornets? Wallaby.
Are you seriously going? Okay.
All right, man.
What did you say at the end there?
You're not even going to stay for the answer?
While IP, I've got you.
I'm going to take this first. Because all right,
never mind. I'll stay for you.
No, but you said
I'll take this answer. I'll take this first. I would have said. I think you have to say the Hornets. Sorry, Josh. I have to say the Hornets
just because
they're a little less. You have to assume they're a little less experienced. So that gives you a little edge. I don't really want to get into a playoff series with Dwayne Wade and and Joe Johnson and Luol Deng all at the same time.
And Luol Deng.
That's right.
He's good.
You heard.
Will says this incredulously as if he didn't try to concoct 100 trade scenarios for Luol Deng this year.
I'm just saying.
You don't have a microphone, bro.
Yeah.
Just leave the room.
I would say the Hornets as well, just because I don't think Nick Batum is 100%. He's probably going to play today, or is he playing today?
He's playing today.
Yeah. So, but I just don't know if he's 100%, and he's so important to them. And I think that's just an easier sort of path that takes away the biggest threat to shut down DeRozan on the wing. And Miami is weird, and I don't know. Like, they're not going to be as good as they were in games 1 and 2, obviously. Against the Hornets, they're not going to have the most efficient game literally in their history, according to Zach Lowe and Tom Haverstraw. I would still take the Hornets. I think the Raptors, as much as people are down on the Raptors and as badly as they played, I think the Raptors can kind of hang with both of those teams, and I think they'd be probably 7-game series, and the Raptors could very well win. But give me the Hornets because they don't have maybe their best player.
I say the Hornets so I can continue my recruiting pitch to Nick Batum every time he comes here, you know? Let him know. That's the point. That's why I got the new place. There's room for Nick Batum. He can move in. It's a nice area of town.
He's not coming to an apartment above a pop-up.
It's also above a Booster Juice.
These are not...
He can get that Jose Bautista endorsement.
He doesn't know who Bautista is.
Brad's got a question.
I've always got questions. If we do face the Hornets... And given that Gerald Henderson is now with the Blazers.
Thank goodness.
Yes, it's a sweep.
I feel like Frank Kaminsky's going to be the Raptor killer.
I think you were overrating Frank Kaminsky at this juncture. Then.
Yeah, you are.
But
while the Hornets guy just said, yeah, you are.
It's probably Marvin Williams destroying Louis Scola once Louis Scola regains his starting job. So.
Frank Kaminsky on paper is the type of big who can hurt the Raptors for sure. And he quietly had what I thought was... What?
Sorry,
and he quietly had like a pretty good rookie season. I know Hornets fans weren't like thrilled with him some of the time, but their big rotation is also just weird, and I don't think it's necessarily a Kaminsky thing. It's a those bigs don't really fit together thing. But he's a pick and pop threat. They don't use him a ton that way, but I think they would against the Raptors if the Raptors started big. The big thing is that Frank Kaminsky is a terrific bench celebration guy, which is huge for momentum, especially the games at home. And like, he's a huge threat to like cause drama by stealing someone's girl. And that
is
could,
he known?
Yeah,
is
he's
he
Mr.
Known?
Steal Your Girl.
Is he known? Have you looked at him?
So like, he could cause a whole issue off the court for any of the Raptors at just the snap of his fingers.
He's a weird looking.
Frank Kaminsky and Amber Rose is weird.
That's I got.
Frank Kaminsky and Amber Rose is weird,
go.
But like,
R.I.P. the pod.
So who's the Raptor killer then?
It's Jeremy.
I think it's Marvin Williams.
It's always been Jeremy Lin.
We need somebody different.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry,
actually, that's true. It is Jeremy Lin.
No, I'm going Marvin Williams.
I was at that game where he killed
100% Marvin Williams.
Yes.
Marvin
Williams is a good call because he's a guy who could show well whether it's Scola starting, whether it's Pat
He's
Patterson
like not
starting.
Shitty Solomon Hill.
That's what I was going to say. Rich man Solomon Hill.
Yeah.
Rich man's Harry B.
Yeah, oh. That's,
is that all we got?
No, Marvin Williams is like...
Good.
Let's just get past Game 6 first before we...
No!
I'll be at the Derby in Dundas West to watch Game 6 if anyone wants to join.
I don't.
Thank you. I'm not asking you, Meatball.
You already asked me and got shut down when you thought the game was on Thursday.
That's true. I know. It's been a rough week.
This guy runs Raptors HQ. I had no idea what day game six was. Read Raptors
Republic. Cut this out of the podcast.
I'm kidding.
Is there
an estimate of what time the game's going to be on Friday?
Okay, so it depends a little bit how things go tonight. It probably won't be a 6 o'clock start again because there are guaranteed to be at least 3 games Friday. The reason it was a 6 o'clock start is because they have to give 2 national TV games, and with the 2 starts being Toronto and Atlanta, they couldn't bump anything to like 9 o'clock. But since one of the games will be a West Coast game, they can do like an 8-10-30 thing or a 7-30-10 thing. The most likely scenario is the Raptors get bumped to NBA TV and start at 7 or 7:30. Heat Hornets get the 8 o'clock start time, and then the West Coast game goes on at 10:30 or whatever. So it's 7 or 7:30 probably. I think 6 is more or less out with 3 games. That's not like 100% confirmed, but that's been the pattern over the last couple of years.
And for the record, you couldn't come to the Derby because you had to sit by your notebook and take notes.
You had to do my job. Like,
do your job!
Don't do this. The reason I won't go to the Derby is because like I can't watch an elimination playoff game out at a bar on TV because I have to like be doing work for Shane. That's anyway.
Gotta be a man of the people.
Does anyone know if the Raptors have a better idea for the T-shirts if there is a game 7?
Look, I thought the ghost of DeRozan's jump shot was a terrific T-shirt design.
I thought it was a meteor hitting the planet Earth.
They were predicting the Raptors were going to eliminate it.
Which is
like
a weird choice, I feel like, for a team based on dinosaurs. But anyways.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. I'd like to see purple.
No, the beaver shirt is not fine.
I want
purple beaver shirt. It looks horrible.
Look, the red and white actually, from up top, I don't know how it came across on TV. It did look great by the time people filled in and stuff.
Make red and white shirts. Don't put any beavers on it.
What?
I want purple.
Just give me an OVO shirt, man. I paid a lot for those tickets. I want a shirt I can wear in public.
Your rich friend paid a lot for those tickets, Will.
No, I paid him.
So you've been bragging all this time that you had a rich friend hook you up with tickets and you paid for the tickets off? I've been misled, man.
I sat like 14 rows back for $200, okay? That's pretty good.
It's not bad.
Pretty good.
It's not bad.
Your rich friend,
last year.
Down.
I had season seats last year.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. What?
It was fine.
Last year was nice.
What did you do with a beaver t-shirt?
Well,
John Chick requests one Angry Beaver t-shirt.
I did sleep in it and how happy I was last night, so.
I'll take it.
TMI.
Yeah, have you watched it?
Yes, I've watched it in the time.
Then John Chick is no longer interested in your show. Are we going to end on that note, or what?
We're going to end on Will's
show. Yeah, I think that's all we got.
Yeah, does anyone else have anything else?
You
know. Awesome.
Thank you guys so much, man.
Alex.
Thank you, Alex, for being the silent one.
Thank you for coming. Are we going to Miami if it's Heat Raptors?
I got.
I know you're gonna go.
Yeah. We'll go.
Yeah. Okay.
I know some people in Clearwater.
We're going to his grandma's house.
Hey, you know it.
Okay, thanks so much for coming, everyone. Thanks for recording, Sean.
Yeah, you can find. This will be up at both. The headquarters and Raptors Republic's podcast feeds. I'm not sure how the audio will be, but we'll see. You already heard it, so you guys are clear.
You already know it's bad.
Yeah.
I don't know about the quality, but the content.
Obviously, RaptorsHQ.com, RaptorsRepublic.com. Check some of our stuff out. I'm at Woodley Sean on Twitter.
I'm at AK_Reynolds on Twitter.
It's mostly movie tweets.
They're
good movies.
I'm a Renaissance man, to be honest with you,
but whatever.
I give Dan a hard time, but he's good
does
stuff.
He does bust my chops quite a bit.
He's good stuff. I'm going to bust your left knee up June 12th.
Here we go.
I'm Blake Murphy, at Blake Murphy ODC, and this is my boy Will.
Yeah, at William_Lumi.
Your long list of plugs that we usually do on the weekly extra podcast.
Yeah, find me on the internet, man. I make a lot of content on the internet, and I'm sure you guys would like to see it sometime.
Fortunately, there's no other people with the name William and Lou in the same sort of name, so it's easy to find.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Just no other famous Williams and Lou.
If you ever want to find my content, just search William Lou Raptors. I'm sure you'll find me, not really.
All right, thanks so much, guys. We really appreciate this. This was a lot of fun. Hope you guys had some fun, too.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Yeah.